Well, there's not a whole lot, not a whole lot going on in the city. One of the things that has occurred recently, and I'm clearly glad that I'm not a school board member that was confronted with this issue. But I'm curious, Mark, what you think and what the audience might think about the Keene school teacher who it appears is going to be reinstated to his job after he was found involved with marijuana. It started out as a felony level charge, manufacturing or growing it, and then I guess it was reduced to possession and criminal trespass, which are both misdemeanors. And you know, I'm not sure where I stand on that issue. And again, I'm glad I wasn't on the school board that I had to render an opinion.
Well, it wasn't the Keene school board. He lives in Keene. He lives in Harrisville.
That's correct.
Okay, so it's Daryl Bamer.
Bamer
is his name. And you know, I think that there's a lot to this story. That kind of there's a few lessons to be had. If you're going to, you know, be arrested for cultivating marijuana, it's good to be a state employee because you get a little more deference. I'm sorry, the average person, you know, or some, not the average, the person who's, you know, on the low income scale, perhaps not of the Caucasian persuasion, I think that they might not have gotten their charges reduced as readily as Mr. Bamer did. I mean, people saw Mr. Bamer as a great school teacher, and they said, well, you know, if we get him for cultivation, we got to fire him. So maybe we could drop the charges down a little bit, and then he'll have a chance of staying. I know that it was a 4-1 vote. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
In order to keep him, and I'm for that. I want Mr. Bamer to stay. I hear he's a great teacher. I think people are coming around to the idea that marijuana as a recreational drug is probably as harmless or more harmless, if there is such a way of putting together words, than alcohol. And you know, I think that you could see that meted out here. It was the school superintendent
Bill Gurney.
Yeah, he said that the behavior to his estimation was immoral, as opposed to there was some other term that certainly just criminal. And he wanted to see Mr. Bamer go, but the school board didn't agree. So
yeah, well, immorality in a role model situation. Mm-hmm. excuse me. Speaking of alcohol. I sent you this by email recently. A fraternity up at Dartmouth College again got itself in trouble by providing alcohol to a 17-year-old swimming star, I guess, who they were trying to recruit to the Dartmouth College.
Shocking! People are drinking at college.
Imagine that. But in reading about it online, a lot of people who wrote said, and I'm paraphrasing. 18-year-olds, because this kid was 17, but forget that for a moment.
Yeah.
18-year-olds, if they're old enough to die for their country, i.e. join the military,
yep,
then they ought to be old enough to drink. And I agree.
I tend to agree,
so,
too.
So here's my solution to that. If you believe that to be the case as an 18-year-old, then join the military, be it the reserves, the guard, or full-time Army, Marines, Air Force, Navy, Coast Guard. Join them, and then, sure, then you can drink. We'll give you an ID card that says you're a member, and you could, in fact, die for your country should you be called upon to do so. And you can present that when you go to your local. You don't have to go steal beer at the Price Chopper in the morning, because now you have a legitimate ID card. But don't hand me this argument that if I'm 18 and I'm old enough to die for my country, I'm old enough to drink. Baloney.
Well, I think that as we can see, it all plays to the sort of the nationalist idea here. I think that 18-year-olds should be able to drink because I think 18-year-olds should be able to drink. However, I can see your point, and what it does is it kind of shows the favors that the government's allowed to bestow. You could very well do that. You could say, well, the drinking age is 21. Unless you're in the military, then it's 18, and maybe it's on base. I would imagine that you would then hire more MPs to handle increased young person drinking. But, you know, to me, what I see with the drinking situation is that in Europe, where kids are taught to drink wine with their meals and things like that, the instances of alcoholism are significantly lower. You don't have kids being taught how to consume alcohol by their friends. I mean, that's how I was taught. 16-year-olds taught me to drink. My mom and my dad didn't.
Yeah, that's kind of old. I can remember being a little bit younger than that when when I learned how. Good morning, caller. You're on the air with Fred and Mark.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, and glad to see people on the radio. Your substitute duo. That's good.
Well, it's nice to hear you. I hear you frequently on the Brattleboro radio station, but
yeah.
Good to talk with you here.
He's a good guy.
He is. What's on your mind today, David?
I was going to call and say, so you all were talking about drinking, and it made me think about that fellow that made some trouble for himself by stealing beer and then going exacerbating the problem by basically going on a crazy chase and going nuts. What a mistake.
I mean, boy, you got to really want a beer to do all that.
Exactly. Smashing into a police car. Oh,
is this the guy that got shot?
No. This is yesterday morning.
Oh, no. I didn't know about this.
18-year-old Chesterfield or West Chesterfield gentleman went into Price Chopper at about 5 a.m. and shoplifted beer. I don't know what quantity. They reported him to the police. And at 5 a.m., not a lot of vehicles in the lot, so I guess they saw what he got into. The police saw it moments later on Winchester near Key Road. They attempted to stop it. He took off in a pursuit up Island, out West, out Park, down Maple Avenue, down Route 12 to the T intersection at 9, took a right, headed back towards Brattleboro area. Police put down spike mats.
Oh, gosh.
took out one or two of his tires. He went into the Covenant Church parking lot on the corner of Base Hill Road, where the police boxed his vehicle in with their vehicles, where he started to play pinball.
Oh, God.
Trying to bounce off said police vehicles.
Boy, there's going to be a lot of restitution
involved in his case. And ultimately, they extricated him from his vehicle because I guess he wasn't going willingly.
Yeah, he probably fell down on the pavement a few times.
Is that pretty much the story, David?
No, that is it. And the nuts, just turning shoplifting from shoplifting into
holy mackerel.
What? Yeah. He could go to jail for a long time, Shashi.
Well, he could, but he won't.
Jeopardy, like with that's a deadly vehicle, deadly weapon, isn't it? The smashing into the car.
Were there cops in the cars that got hit?
I don't know if they were in or out of them at that point in time, but it could be construed assault with a deadly weapon, in that a vehicle is
the most deadly weapon.
Yeah,
in the United
is
States.
The most deadly weapon. Absolutely. Yeah. Have any big plans for Christmas, David?
I don't make big plans for the holidays. Huh.
All right.
Not too much. But I was going to say one other thing. I put the impetus on having a very oppressive law changed in Keene.
Quickly, because we have to take a break. Tell me what it is, and then we'll discuss it.
It's the bicycle registration law. It got carried in their meeting on Wednesday.
Okay. We'll bring that up after the break.
Okay. Bye.
And you're listening to Talk Back on Keene's News Station, 1290 WKBK Keene, and now on FM 104.1, and we'll be back shortly. Anything exciting going on in city council world that you know of?
Not a lot. I missed all last week, so I don't really know what's going on this week, but it's amazing how all you have to be gone is one week and you lose track of everything that's going on.
So let me put you on the spot, Chairwoman of the Finance Committee.
Yes.
I disagree with the city getting involved in helping to put the sprinkler system into the 100-night facility. And the reason I disagree is that's a privately owned building that's being rented for profit, and I see that as the landlord's obligation, not the city, not the taxpayers. What do you say?
I tend to agree with you, except there are times when we have to do what's right for citizens who can't afford to do it themselves. And this is to serve those people that are homeless, to make other places available so that they won't be out on the street. And apparently they would be out on the street or sleeping in the woods somewhere if the city didn't do it.
Well, perhaps. But again, we have a private landlord who is renting this space for profit. And now we're going to assist him to do that. I don't suspect they're going to go into my home or yours to upgrade it so I can bring in a couple of homeless people.
Well, I don't know. I wasn't there at the meeting. I understand from the news report that it was 2-2. I kept thinking, who would dare miss that meeting? And then I realized it was me.
So, Cynthia, I've heard accusations, and I'm certainly not, my finger isn't, completely on the pulse of what's going on in Keene, but I've heard people say that people come from all around America, and certainly all around the New England area, to come to Keene, New Hampshire for its, homeless services and that kind of thing. I've heard that the Leather Man, whatever his name, I think is James, Leather Man, he his claim is that, that the food at the Keene Kitchen's the best, so I came here. I moved here from Massachusetts.
Oh, dear. It's my understanding, and we got something on this, something written on this just a short while ago, and somebody should correct me if I'm wrong. I believe 65% of all homeless people served in Keene, either by the homeless shelters or the community kitchen, 65% are from Keene.
How do they verify those numbers? I mean, they just ask them and they say...
Well, I guess. I don't know.
I sort of wonder what makes someone from Keene. I moved here 4 years ago. Am I from Keene?
No, you're from Westmoreland.
Okay, well, that much is true. But I can tell you in Westmoreland, we don't have this problem.
Right. No, I think that's what they say. You know, if your home right now is in Gilsum or Westmoreland or Walpole or Stoddard or wherever it is, mm-hmm. that's where you're from. So 40% of the people that are, 35% of the people that are served are from the outlying, I don't know that they're from the outlying area, but they're not from the greater Keene area. 65% are from the greater Keene area, and the rest are from away.
Well, it's certainly a philosophical debate, and if I'm a betting man, I'm going to bet that the city council will ultimately approve that, and
they are softies,
and life will go on. Cynthia, we do have another call.
I have to go.
Merry Christmas, happy holidays.
Thank you.
We don't have another call. Mark. All right, take care. Bye bye. You were teasing me, Mark. They dropped.
It was a hang up.
Just quickly to go back to our caller before we went to our 9:30 break, David brought up the bike registration.
I wanted to talk about that. That's
ordinance.
Very interesting to me that the idea that we register bicycles in the city of Keene. I was a lawbreaker on this particular issue. I rode my bicycle in Keene quite a bit when I lived here, and I never registered it at all.
As am I. I'm hesitant to reveal, but I still am to this day because it's still an ordinance. Good morning, caller. You are on the air with Fred and Mark.
Good morning. I was just calling for an announcement this morning, too.
Please
do. This morning at 10 o'clock and tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, 109 Shelters having training sessions for volunteers.
Okay. Where will that occur?
It's going to be at 15 Lamson Street at the shelter. It's 2 hours today and tomorrow for anyone that's interested in volunteering.
So that's the that's the little shop that's right behind Timoleon's on that alleyway. Is that correct?
That's the Open Doors. That's the drop-in center. It's actually going to be in the shelter upstairs, which is on the alley under the canopy.
Okay.
I assume this is Don?
Yep.
Good morning, Don.
Fred.
How are you today?
Good.
You probably just heard me discussing the city of Keene getting involved with Cynthia. Did you hear that?
I did, yeah.
And I would assume you're in favor of the city being involved?
I am. I can understand both sides of the coin.
Uh-huh.
When you're talking, it's not like it was residential property. When you're talking commercial property, when I rent a space commercially, I'm responsible for the improvements. And so, yes, it's going into a private building, but the benefits are really for the nonprofit that's going in. If I was making widgets, I wouldn't expect the city of Keene to pay for an 18-inch pipe to come into the building. It's 18 inches in length. It's from the water main into the building. So,
would it be reasonable, it be reasonable someday down the road, 5, 10, 15, 100 years from now, perhaps the 100-night shelter will not exist in that building, yet it will still be benefited by having a sprinkler system. Would it be reasonable to write some language that states to the building owner, if and when it is no longer providing a social service as a 100-night shelter, you will reimburse the city of Keene for the expenses it put in and the cost that it put into that building? Would that be reasonable?
No, I don't think so.
No?
It will benefit. I don't believe so, because we're talking nickels and dimes. If I'm here for 5 years or 10 years, when you prorate that, it's not, I don't think it's worth the paperwork. You know, unless it was a major improvement, like we're talking Blackbrook Park or something,
right.
$15 to $20 million for sewer systems coming back over years. That's a different type of improvement.
All right, Don, they're playing our music.
Yep.
Happy holidays, Merry Christmas to you and your family. And thank you for calling. You are listening to Talk Back on Keene's News Station, 1290 WKBK Keene, and now on FM 104.1. And we will be back in the 10 o'clock hour with Keith Tebow of Southwestern Community Services.
We believe we're very synergistic with Monadnock United Way, and I personally am a I'm a division chair for the Monadnock United Way. I chair the construction division, so I have a team of captains who are, even as we speak, sort of beating the bushes out there trying to talk to our local general contractors, electricians, plumbers, suppliers, and the like, mm-hmm. to donate to the Monadnock United Way. The program's at 84% of its goal. It touches.
Meaning it has 16% to go.
Right, and that last 16% is infinitely more difficult than the first 16%. So I would urge those, if you're out there and you're wondering whether or not you should donate to Monadnock United Way, I really think you ought to consider it a donation.
You know, it's been my thought, and I've lived here a little over 4 years, and it took me a little while to figure this out. You know, for one, people love Cheshire County, the southwest region of New Hampshire. It's a wonderful place to live, and they feel lucky for living here. But, you know, it's difficult to know, well, if I want to give back, how do I do so? And I've found, personally for me, that's I've chosen United Way. I don't know all the facts, but it seemed to me like the best way to be able to give the money to people who would know best how to allocate it, and you know, for the local community, for people in my area to benefit the community at large. That's what do you think about that? As a
Absolutely.
Chair, it seems like I agree.
You're preaching to the choir here. The allocations process of the Monadnock United Way is rigid. They'll start that process real soon for next year, but they go into each organization. There's a team that's really tied to that organization. They get to know it intimately. They scrutinize its budgets. They really do determine the true need. And for most organizations, United Way provides a relatively small percentage of their funding. There are some very very small programs in the region, very valuable to us.
But they also provide a certain level of sort of management help to those programs, that they give them guidelines and that sort of thing.
Clearly.
Yeah, I mean, so that, you know, not, how infinitely valuable is that?
Exactly.
Because the United Way has been around so long, they know so much about doing these things.
And the interesting thing is their allocations committee, and there's 30 or more people that are on that, they're local businessmen, they're local folks who know this community real well, get to know sort of the social service side and vice versa. So there's a lot of interrelationships that get built up through that process alone, and it helps to knit the fabric of the Monadnock region. I've often said that the Monadnock United Way is really very indicative of how this region works. It's self-sufficient. It is very willing to help its own.
As evidenced by a much lower unemployment level than the rest of the nation currently.
Absolutely.
You know, this, I can't begin to say philosophically, how many things I agree with that go on in the region. And it's one of the reasons that I give the United Way, because I think it's a great organization.
So do I. And again, like anyone else trying to raise money now, it is struggling to get to that end goal. But it's a way, as I look upon it, it's a way to invest in your community. This community is benefits from having the United Way, and I think vice versa. But it really shows that people in this region are willing to reach into their pockets, not give till it hurts, give till it feels good, and they use payroll deduction an awful lot. So that it's a way that folks can invest in the social service side of their community in a real painless way.
It takes a village, somebody once said.